Richard Glover with you on Drive. 17 minutes past five is the time. I wonder if you have a nickname. Is it regularly used by people in your workplace? And how do you feel about it? Is it a sign of love and acceptance? Or does it feel like teasing, or worse, like belittling? So what's your work nickname? What are the best ones you've heard? And is it an Australian tradition which we should be proud of? What do you reckon about the workplace nickname? 1-300-222-702 is our number. 1-300-222-702. Lucy Taxka is from Macquarie University's Business School, and she joins us in the studio. Good afternoon.
Hello, Richard.
As an Australian tradition, it has been around for a long time, for decades and decades, maybe even for a century or two.
It certainly has, but it's certainly not just an Australian tradition. I mean, there's been examples going back to the Middle Ages that have been found. And originally the term nickname comes from the Middle English alternative name. So there's been examples found in all workplaces that you can imagine throughout history, right up to the present, call centres and... you know, in the emergency services as well, where people really use nicknames sometimes as a safety valve. So paramedics might call those that have been burnt crispy critters and so on.
Which might sound insulting, but really is a way of dealing with the unimaginable things they're coping with.
Well, that's right. It's a coping mechanism, but it's also... performs all sorts of other functions like insiders and outsiders. So it demarcates who belongs and who understands the language. Because generally, nicknames are very much localised. There are sort of a local politics, friendship transaction. But you have to be able to understand. So you can be excluded if you don't. And one of my favourite examples is from the Everleigh Railway Workshops.
Where you did a lot of work, actually.
Well, I did a lot of research on workplace cultures, and that's how I found these nicknames. One migrant worker asked another worker why another bloke was called Bluey. And the answer was because he has red hair. And the migrant didn't understand, because that tradition of calling people by opposites was not known to this, it was Italian culture. But so nicknames usually are quite informative. They're what's been called speaking social relations, but they pick out things that distinguish people. Often bodily things. So a guy at Everleigh was called the groper because he had big lips like a local fish in our waters.
That's not very kind.
Another guy was called the pregnant emu because he had a big head and a big belly, and so on.
I love the guy at Everleigh in your research who's called Speedy.
Because he's so slow.
So yes. That opposites thing again.
Yes, and one worker that was being chastised by others for breaking the speed norms was called Farlap, and that was actually in America. So these nicknames can actually be quite international. And another one in America, actually in the 20s, was called Roadrunner. So, you know, these sorts of forms of social control are quite dominant. And so, for example, there's also a gendered element to it. In the General Motors plant in Mexico, one worker who burst into tears because he couldn't keep up with the pace of the assembly line was given the name La Llorona, which is the weeping woman of Mexican tradition.
So they're saying you're a big girl, basically.
You're not a man. And we find this sort of gendered nicknaming quite prominent in politics. You heard on the weekend, no doubt, that our Prime Minister is a man of titanium. But in fact, titanium was the nickname given to Madeleine Albright when she was trying to get the wise old men of NATO to come to the party. She was the titanium lady.
And so quite complimentary, though, I guess.
Well, there's a gender ambiguity there because, you know, titanium or iron ladies, iron is usually associated with men, not with women. And the lady sort of undermines the masculine characteristics of leadership, but she's not quite a lady because she's got this masculine element.
Although, I mean, with Thatcher, I think Iron Lady was meant as a compliment by those who adored her, actually.
Well,
maybe it wasn't at the time. We'll have to go back to 1979 and look. Yeah.
But she's certainly not the only Iron Lady. I've found 30. Even Julia Gillard was one. Helen Clark was another. France had their own Mitterrand's Iron Lady and so on. But they can be quite disparaging, these sorts of masculine and feminine characteristics put together. So, for example, Jan Arendt was the perfumed steamroller.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so these terms can range into not only the derogatory, but towards vilification. And we've got a lot of vilification happening in our societies, well, around the world at the moment, but certainly in our workplaces. So it's really important to look at how people name each other. And, you know, certainly humour is embracing and it can be very good, but it depends on the person who's receiving
and how they
name.
And how they feel about it. We're talking about work nicknames, particularly in the workplace. I wonder if you've got experience of this. Maybe you had a nickname. Did you like it? Was it a sign of affirmation and of acceptance, or did you feel it was being used as a weapon against you? Were there some great nicknames in your place which illustrated that humour of the, well, obviously the bluey for the redhead and all that opposites in Australian nicknaming? You might be able to tell us. 1-300-222-702. Lucy Taxer is with us from Macquarie University. And one of the other things is the nickname for the boss. You know, I remember in the days of Kerry Packer and ACP, he had a guy called, from America, called, I think he was called Chainsaw Dunlap, and he was the cost cutter, and everyone, yes, as part of their opposition to him, called him Chainsaw. Maybe he liked it, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, there was a guy at the Newport workshops who was not very pleasant, and they called him Tojo. He was the leader of the Japanese fascist army in Japan, and so there was also some women in a meat packing.
Sorry, this was back in the '50s when it was to the war.
These women in a meat packing firm in a Scandinavian country described their manager as a rooster in the hen house because of his sexual harassment and so on.
That's using humour to get your own back in a sense.
Yeah, compensatory justice in effect, you know. One was called Helium Balloon because, you know, he was there and then he was gone.
Floating past, the boss who floats past.
Correct.
Very familiar character in the Australian workplace. Professor Lucy Taxer is with us. Just on the text, my last name is Bear, you know, the German B-E-H-R, and I get called Humphrey.
Yes.
Of course, I did.
Yes.
We had a workmate who had been married 4 times. We called him Lord of the Rings. See, not bad. Pothole was the best work nickname I've heard. It was because people went out of their way to avoid him. That's from Peter. And my husband is an accountant and a man of few words. His mates at work all refer to him as Rowdy because he's so quiet. That's not bad,
That's
is it?
That's the opposite thing,
isn't it? Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And someone says Melonhead because I'm bald. So this is where you're with this dividing line, which really... Really, you've got to sense the reaction of the person. One melon head might think that's affectionate. The next melon head might think, oh, come on, give me a break.
Yeah, it's a fine line, and it can be seen as a language, and argot is the French word for it, that binds people. But that same form of binding can be a form of social control, and really attacking people who do the wrong thing by the group norms. So one guy who couldn't keep secrets was called Electric Lips.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, for example, in the 1950s when they used to bring in the efficiency experts, the efficiency expert was called the Snoop.
Yes, yes.
This was about disparaging that behaviour. So there's a huge connection, I think, between the words, the naming and the behaviour. And we need to sort of think very carefully about the words we use because they can be warm and embracing, but they can also be very hurtful.
But, you know, I've heard people say that in language classes for new migrants, this is one of the things they say, is that when someone teases you in the workplace, providing it's not malicious and awful, that can be a sign of acceptance. And similarly, when you're first given a nickname, again, providing it's not malicious and awful, it's actually, bang, you've arrived. That's the good moment.
So the way I started looking deeper into nicknames was when I discovered that there was an industrial nurse at the Everleigh Railway Workshops from 1947. She worked there till 1968. She was an amazing woman. She got the first industrial award for these nurses and set up the College of Nursing with other women and got an MBE. But for the men, she was the Beast of Belsen.
Wow.
And, I mean, you have to see when she was hired. Not many women were in the industrial workplace, and it was at the time of the Lüneburg trials when the real Beast of Belsen, the commander of Bergen-Belsen, was on trial. And she took no prisoners. She was as tough as nails. And so
still, it's a pretty harsh name, isn't it?
It's a very harsh name, but, you know, I kind of think that really what they were doing was showing her respect, because everybody, they all told me everybody had a nickname in those workshops, all the men who belonged. The fact that they gave her and not one of the other industrial nurses a nickname meant that they kind of gave her grudging respect and kind of included her. So it's this double-sided...
Mm-mm. It's complex,
you know,
isn't it?
It is.
Whether that's a compliment of a weird sort or whether it's an insult. I do like this from Christian Avalon, who was called Singlet when he worked in television, because he was always on the backs of the people getting them to do their jobs, I guess. Yeah. Singlet Morris was his name. His dad was called Mirrors Morris because he was always going to look into it. That's from Chris in Avalon. The great nicknames of the Aussie office as crunched by Professor Lucy Taxer, co-director of the Centre for Workplace Futures at Macquarie University. Thank you so much for coming in. Yeah, some thoughts on the complexities of this Australian tradition, well, maybe a world tradition, of the office nickname.